This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with another exclusive interview, we want to encourage you to join us live at Twitter, at E-Radio Sports. You can always email the show. We love to hear from our listeners. info@eradiosports.com and podcastarena.com. Of course, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's better parts, better prices every day. We are so excited. We have secured another fascinating interview, and we are going to shine a spotlight on a brand new book. That is with icon rock climber. He is now an author. He can add that to his title. The great, the very talented Tommy Caldwell is with us at SB Nation. The title of his new book is The Push, A Climber's Search for the Path. And Tommy Caldwell, I tell you what, just incredible resume and credentials. He is widely considered the best all-around rock climber in the world. He has received so many prestigious awards, and it is truly an honor to have him with us for the very first time tonight. What a great way to gear up for the summer months than going one-on-one with Mr. Tommy Caldwell. Good evening, Tommy.
Hello, yeah, great to be here today.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on, and there's just so much that's so fascinating about your story. And I think the first thing I'm thinking about, you know, where do we want to start this conversation? And let's begin with, how did you pinpoint this passion to be a rock climber?
Oh, my dad was a mountain guide, so it was kind of a family thing. As a child, I didn't really know another life, but as a teenager, I really fell in love with it when my friends started to get into it. And, you know, once you live that life as a rock climber, it's kind of like, it's hard to go back. You know, it's a very vibrant, exciting way to live, and the community is close. And, once people really get into it, they usually don't stop.
Icon rock climber Tommy Caldwell with us in hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for a quick break, and we will be right back as we continue to highlight New York Times bestseller, his book, The Push.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our conversation where we just left off with icon rock climber Tommy Caldwell. So take us into some of those adventures that you've been on and some of the things that you have been able to conquer through rock climbing.
I mean, from the time that I was really young, I was climbing kind of the iconic rock formations around the U.S., like Devil's Tower. I went to Yosemite every year.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Climbed some of the big walls there from a really young age. I lived in Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, outside the national park there. And so even starting from age three, I was climbing up these, you know, 300-400-foot spires and, like, flying kites off the top of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tommy, I am from the Big Sky Country. I'm from Great Falls, Montana, and certainly Glacier National Park, very special. Have you ever had an opportunity to go over there and spend some time doing some climbing in Glacier National?
You know, I haven't. I've done a bit of hiking there, but the the rock quality, Glacier isn't known for its rock climbing per se. It is known for its kind of more mountaineering, but I specialize a bit more in the big sheer rock faces. Mm-hmm. But it is a beautiful place.
Oh,
absolutely,
it is
amazing.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. You know, as a rock climber, how do you prepare mentally for something like this? And you can kind of take us into just like physically the type of things that you do to stay in peak performance and stay in top shape. I mean, do you listen to music when you're climbing? I mean, where do you take your mind?
Really it's like you train your mind the same way you would train a muscle. I've been doing this for so long that Yeah, I mean, it depends on the style of climbing that you're doing. You know, climbing is a very diverse sport. You can do it inside. You can do it on small boulders. The thing I specialize in is the big walls, which is, you know, both. It's a great combination of the physical endeavor. You have to, you know, I train year-round. I train, you know, much the way an Olympic athlete would. But it's also this conversation with risk and this constant analysis of how to kind of keep yourself safe in this potentially dangerous environment. And so that, you know, that just takes a lot of experience more than anything.
You're listening to The Voice, Tommy Caldwell with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Icon Rock Climber has a new book. It is now available in paperback. That is The Push, A Climber's Search for the Path. And talk to me about how did writing a memoir change you?
You know, I don't think I was a very introspective person before writing this book. I had, you know, kind of just lived life to experience it and not thought about the meaning of it beyond that. And writing a book, I guess, enabled me to really sit down and process all these experiences and figure out how they were all related and make meaning of life. And I think I did it a lot because I have my own family now and I was trying to figure out how I want to raise them and the sort of values I want to instill.
You know, I have to wonder, too, we got Father's Day coming up here, you know, in a few weeks. You know, having a family, I mean, Tommy, how much did that change you? And a little bit more conservative, not maybe such a daredevil with what all you do with rock climbing? Is that a fair question?
Yes, that's definitely a fair question.
Okay, all right.
I think if I didn't have a family, I would aspire to go on big expeditions to remote places in the Himalayas or Baffin Island or Greenland. And so I choose not to do that kind of stuff. I pick the type of climbing that I feel is, you know, safe enough. That's one of the reasons I focus on Yosemite National Park so much, because the rock quality there is so good. You know, rocks don't fall down and hit you there generally. But yet it's big. It feels adventurous. It kind of fulfills that desire to, you know, to battle a bit, to have an adventure. So you just have to pick the right level of risk. And so, yeah, having a family has made me dial that back a bit.
I'm sure. Hey, New York Times bestseller. It is titled The Push, A Climber's Search for the Path. We are going one-on-one with icon rock climber, and that is Tommy Caldwell. So let's open up the book. Talk to us and our listeners across the country tonight. What are some of the stories that you share, and what's perhaps the most precarious situation that you've ever been into?
Right. So I started out writing this book on what is now currently Chapter 5, actually, on my first big international climbing expedition to Kyrgyzstan, where I got kidnapped by a rebel group called the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan and held hostage for 6 days. And it was just such this life-changing, like, touchstone moment. And, I kind of think of my life in terms of, like, what led up to that and then what has happened since. And, in writing this book, I wanted to figure out how that changed me, because I feel like I have lived sort of every day to its fullest since then. Like we were really close to death on that experience, and I don't take things for granted now. So that was definitely the most precarious situation. Whole kidnapping experience in Kyrgyzstan.
Right. And I was going to say, you know, going through this process as far as, you know, writing a book, I mean, because you take a deep dive, that's got to be pretty therapeutic for you and has helped you heal, right?
Yeah. It was, I hadn't really let myself go back into that experience. I hadn't let myself sort of relive it until I wrote this book. And so that was very therapeutic.
Glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're visiting, going one-on-one with Tommy Caldwell, icon rock climber. And, you know, you've got a lot of fans worldwide. Everyone knows the name Tommy Caldwell. What kind of feedback are you getting? It is a New York Times bestseller. I mean, what kind of feedback are you getting from so many of your fans?
Oh, it's been overwhelming. I'm actually on book tour right now for the paperback edition. So it's been out for a year now. So I'm meeting a lot of, tons of people that have read it. And a lot of the people showing up to the events just want to meet me. And they're very moved by it. I think probably the most common feedback I get is that I was, I put it all out there. I was so vulnerable. I really exposed my life in this way that doesn't usually happen in sports memoirs, And so people really appreciate that. And, I hear multiple stories every day of how it helps somebody through some hard experience in their life, and that's very moving for me to hear. You know, it makes me feel very happy that I decided to take this journey and write this book.
Absolutely. Hey, New York Times bestseller, now available, as Tommy was just mentioning, you know, it's now available in paperback. It is titled The Push, A Climber's Search for the Path. The reviews have been absolutely fantastic. Some say, you know, the most insightful book about climbing that they have ever read. You know, I am curious. I mean, you talk about a major shift and kind of powering down. You know, writing a book is very demanding. And how did you balance that schedule? I mean, here, you know, you're climbing all the time. It's very consuming. It's very, for you, Tommy, I mean, it's very fulfilling. It's been such a big part of life. You've been doing it such, you know, since a young boy, a young child, you know, changing things up. How did that work out? What was that like?
I mean, I've always been very, very disciplined because mm-hmm. climbing demands that.
Right.
And so I applied that, but I've also been really goal oriented. Like you know, in climbing, you pick these major objectives. You pick some climb that you want to do, and then you kind of format your life to make that happen. So I just repeated that with the book. You know, I found a good team of people to help me. I did my research, and then I just applied that discipline. I would start writing at 4 o'clock every day and write until like 2 p.m.
Wow.
And, you know, no matter what, I would just kind of make myself do that, whether I was feeling it or not. And, yeah, so it worked out. And just the work ethic. I mean, I spent, you know, 30 to 40 hours for a year working on this thing. And still managed to fit in a bit of the climbing. I definitely dialed back my climbing for that year.
Yeah, I bet you did.
But I also had a child during that time, and so it was a hectic time. But it was an incredible time. I'm very, very happy decided to take that journey. Yeah.
Well, hey, we've been talking and going one-on-one with Tommy Caldwell, icon rock climber, and highlighting his book. As he said, it's actually been out for over a year now available in paperback, very well-received, New York Times bestseller, A Climber's Search for the Path. And we want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of that. And, Tommy, you've had so many achievements. Congratulations on that. And, you know, it's the month of May. We're wrapping up, but I just want to wish you a happy Father's Day, too, okay? Because it'll be here before you know it.
Yes. Thank you so much. That's my first happy Father's Day.
Yay. Okay. Have a great weekend, Tommy. Congratulations. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. You too.
Thank you. That, of course, was Tommy Caldwell with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We will continue right here in hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in radio, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it is Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. As always, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. And yes, we are in Houston. So much talk right now about the Rockets. We're going to shift gears. In our next segment, we're going to spend some time talking about and shining the spotlight on the Houston Astros. Of course, they brought home the first World Series trophy in 2017, ending the third longest drought in big league history. And we are so delighted to have with us tonight from the Houston Chronicle, that is columnist and editor. He is an award-winning author, very talented. Joe Hawley is with us because we're going to talk about his new book that he has just released, Hurricane Season, the unforgettable story of the 2017 Houston Astros and the resilience of a city. We are resilient here in Houston, aren't we, Joe? Hello.
Absolutely, Alyssa. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so wonderful to have you on the program. And, you know, before we take a deep dive and walk down memory lane and relive just that magical, the memorable season and how it all came together, I want to get your thoughts on the Astros. What do you think about how the season, you know, we're wrapping up the month of May. How do you think the season has played out up to this point?
You know, they're not quite where they were this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
They were almost on a glide path early in the season toward a World Series championship. And they're struggling. They're not hitting as well yet. Pitching is going well. And we have to acknowledge that they are in first place in their division.
That's
so
right.
It's certainly not disastrous, but they're just not quite there yet. But we'll see. As you mentioned, people are paying attention to the Rockets these days.
Absolutely. It's certainly very exciting. Glad you're with us, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. You know, you bring up a great point, Chuck, talking about Joe, that, you know, perhaps the Astros, you know, they're having some offensive struggles at times. But what about defensively? I mean, certainly Verlander, I mean, he has been sensational.
Oh, man, Verlander and Charlie Morton as well.
Okay, yes, you know, Charlie.
He found himself in the World Series last year, and he hasn't let up. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Which is a great story also. Is, you know, he's an older guy, struggled with injuries and sort of knocked around the league, and suddenly here he is. Man, he's something.
You know, Joe, being with the Houston Chronicle, you have an opportunity to, you know, do profiles on players. And is there one in particular on this roster with the Astros that you find perhaps most compelling or you know, of interest?
You can't ignore the amazing Jose Altuve.
Okay, yeah.
5'6", who's had to fight and scramble for everything he's ever had his whole life. And it's just an inspiring story. He's a great story. Alex Bregman, the New Mexico guy at third base, is a great story. So George Springer, overcoming stuttering. I mean, almost everybody you mentioned on the Astros starting lineup is worth a story.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Springer, you know, the World Series MVP. You know, as we entered into the 2018 season for the Astros, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about this team, this organization, it just is the continuity with the roster. So talk a little bit about that. And also, what were your expectations coming into this year? I mean, are they going to repeat?
You know, they were in the World Series in 2017 to fulfill a prophecy, if you will, that from Sports Illustrated in 2014 that nobody, I think, really took seriously. But somehow the Sports Illustrated fellow saw the building process that was going on during those dark years when the Astros were losing 100 games a season. And realized that they were putting the pieces together, and it worked out. And you know, the same fellow, Ben Reeder, has predicted that the Astros will repeat. But you know, when you're a team like the Astros that relies so heavily on data and analytics and sort of the outgrowth of Moneyball, you can predict a lot of things. But baseball, like any other sport, also has a lot of uncertainty. So, you know, injuries or luck or whatever you want to call it. So you never know whether a team's going to repeat or not.
Award-winning author, he is with the Houston Chronicle, columnist and editor. Native Texan is the title of his column that comes out each and every week. And that is Joe Hawley with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Love to connect with you tonight. Always live on Twitter. We love Twitter. At E Radio Sports. You can email the show at info@eradiosports.com, talking about the Astros. They're very good. Who do you think is the biggest threat to them at this point in the season?
You know, there are several teams who are playing the same kind of data analytics baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just can't say right now. But often when you win, I think you make yourself a target. And so people are not only emulating the Astros, they're after them.
Mm-hmm.
Teams are, in other words.
Right. You're listening to The Voice, Joe Hawley, Houston Chronicle, with us. Right now, we're going to shift gears. He is an award-winning author, and he has released May 1st, 2018, his latest book, and that is Hurricane Season, The Unforgettable Story of the 2017 Houston Astros and the Resilience of a City. And I want to talk some more about, you know, the decisions that led to building a winning team. You know, as a writer, when did you start seeing that, you know what, they are trending in the right direction, and they're going to be able to accomplish something very special here that's never been done before in Houston?
You know, this process began in 2011 when Jim Crane bought the team and hired as his general manager a fellow from St. Louis, from the St. Louis Cardinals, named Jeff Luno, back in 2011. And Luno came in with a strategy based on the idea that if you relied on the numbers, not on hunches and intuition and sort of the impressionistic view of old scouts, that you had a good chance of succeeding. And so he persuaded Crane that deconstructing the team before you reconstructed the team would take a few years, but that he could almost guarantee success. And so there were some dark years, you know, until the success of 2017, when it took a lot of faith on the part of Crane and probably of Luno himself, certainly of the players, and certainly of Astros fans, when they had to wonder, is this really going to work? And it finally came together, of course, last season.
Mm-hmm. Well, your thoughts on the leadership of Reed Ryan as well?
Yeah, Reed Ryan, as best I can tell, is, you know, he's a solid, personable fellow who probably, in the same way that Crane had to trust Luno and his plan, Ryan had to trust that as well, and probably had to reassure those people who surely had moments of doubt about whether it was going to work.
What were your thoughts in the month of August of 2017 when that, you know, trade went down and they were able to secure Verlander? I mean, what was going through your mind? Come on, bring it, Joe.
No, that was the final key or the key to their success. They needed not only a good starting pitcher, but an experienced, mature starting pitcher. And they found it in Verlander, who certainly had doubts himself because he was considering coming to a city that had just been devastated. And, up until the last minute of the trade deadline, he was making calls to people who knew Houston asking, you know, what's happening down there and what are the Astros like and should I go there?
Absolutely. And it was just a blockbuster, you know, August, no doubt about that. Certainly helped the rotation and had a profound impact when we talk about Justin Verlander. Hey, we are talking with Joe Hawley from the Houston Chronicle. He's an award-winning author, and we are shining the spotlight on his new book. You've got to go out and get a copy of it. It is titled Hurricane Season, The Unforgettable Story of the 2017 Houston Astros and the Resilience of a City. And Joe, you're like a legend here in the state of Texas, and such a dramatic World Series win in 2017. The first title in the history, you know, of not only here in the city of Houston, but in the state of Texas. You've covered the Astros. You've covered baseball for many, many years. Take me through. I want to hear, what were your emotions like? What were you experiencing when this all came down? I mean, you talk about a storybook ending after all the, you know, the hell that our city had gone through
from
the flood.
Yeah, it's not so much that I've covered baseball all over the years, but I'm a fan and I'm aware of the Houston story or the Astros story. I go back to the Houston Colt 45.
Oh, my gosh.
And then back to Judge
Roy. You're dating yourself, Joe.
I know, Lisa. That's you have to do it if it's the truth.
Uh-huh.
But I never knew Judge Roy Hoffein.
Uh-huh.
But that's an amazing story, too, this larger-than-life figure who not only brought Major League Baseball to Houston, but got the Astrodome built. And you remember Hoffein said something to the effect that, yeah, the Eiffel Tower is great, but you can't play baseball in it. and so for the longest time, you know, baseball fans around the country, when they thought of Houston, they probably thought of those sort of weird rainbow-striped uniforms or maybe Nolan Ryan throwing yet another no-hitter, or most likely the Astrodome. And the Astros were just sort of considered a second-tier baseball city until the last year or so.
Well, it was absolutely epic to watch, and that seven-game World Series, and they were able to take care of business and close out and bring home the first World Series, talking about the Houston Astros. And we have been talking about and going one-on-one with Joe Hawley, award-winning author. Highly encourage you, go out and get a copy of his new book. You just, even if you're just a baseball fan, Hurricane Season, The Unforgettable Story of the 2017 Houston Astros and the Resilience of a City. And Joe, we may be reconvening at a later date. Maybe we're talking about this happening all over again in 2018, okay?
Well, let's hope you're talking about a World Series and not a hurricane, right?
Okay. I stand corrected. Absolutely. Hey, we may be. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we've been with Joe Hawley tonight, SB Nation Radio and the Big East Sports Show. Have a wonderful summer, and we'll talk again real soon. Congratulations, Joe.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Absolutely.
Thanks for talking to me.
Yes, sir. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. That is SB Nation Radio and the Big East Sports Show. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
It is hour number two, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Thank you so much for joining us each and every week. Of course, as always, the folks that power us right here at SB Nation, that is Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, they're convenient, they are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. And it has been such an exciting time of year. Of course, the Eastern, the Western Conference Finals. Our coverage continues tonight, and we are so delighted to have with us from CNN.com and, of course, ESPN.com, ESPNU UK, their feature writer, and that is Motez Bashara. Motez, of course, is an author. He's got an upcoming book, Athletes Who Rock. We got to give him a plug for that. And, Motez, it's been way too long. How are you, my friend? It's good to have you back on the show.
It has. Thank you so much for that very kind introduction. Everything is good. I'm back home in London just in time for the royal wedding, which was a lot of fun. And now ready to talk hoops.
Okay, well, I'm always ready to talk hoops, but of course, I had a chance to watch the replay of the royal wedding. I was on the golf course when it all went down. So what were your takeaways? I just thought it was really beautiful and magical.
Yeah, you must have had a pretty early tea time.
Yeah.
That wedding was on probably about 6 a.m.
Okay.
In Houston.
We were getting up early.
I think there was definitely a buzz about town. You know, of course, the wedding was actually in Windsor, which is probably about a 90-minute drive from London itself. But, you know, the weather was superb. There was lots and lots of tourists from all around the world who came in just to be a part of the atmosphere. And I think it was a dual celebration between the UK and the US, you know, to have an American princess for the first time ever, I think, was really, you know, quite a sight to see.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Princess Diana would have thought of her daughter-in-law in Meghan?
I think she would have been very proud, actually, because I think Meghan is an independent woman, exactly like Princess Diana was. And, you know, follows in the same spirit as her. So I think she would have been proud of her son for his decision.
Absolutely. Hey, okay, we're going to move ahead. We're going to talk some sports. Motez Bashara back with us, CNN Sports, ESPN UK, their feature writer with us. And certainly, I think we're going to open up. Let's talk about the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, Boston has certainly done an amazing job against Cleveland. Are you a bit surprised?
I'm shocked. Actually, I really am. I thought that the spotlight would be too much for them. You know, there was a moment we weren't sure if they were going to get out of the first round, right? Against Washington. That looked pretty tight. Especially when Kyrie went down, people thought, well, God, you know, they're just going to run out of gas. They're out of momentum. And it's a confidence thing, too. On the flip side, the youth of this team, outside of a couple of guys like Al Horford, it's a pretty young crowd here in Boston. Even their coach is pretty young. And they, you know, they kind of just don't know any better. Maybe they don't realize they should only be, you know, a couple of games away from the NBA championship. And so they're playing loose. They're playing with no pressure. I mean, we've got to say the Cavs have to have much more pressure on them than the Celtics do. Nobody's really expecting the Celtics to do much. And this is all working in their favor. And the young legs they've got, you know, have also helped them.
I was going to say, you know, what do you think the keys have been for Boston? How have they been able to do this? And they certainly, you know, one thing I'll say too, Motez, is, you know, at home they've taken advantage of it. I mean, they look very comfortable and have capitalized on that home court advantage.
Yeah, I mean, we both know that crowd in Boston is raucous.
Yeah.
Again. Place is deafening. So that certainly works their advantage. They haven't been able to do anything in Cleveland. That really doesn't matter because home court advantage. So the pressure is all on Cleveland to win two in a row. And it's going to be extremely tough. There's nothing so far in the series that says that Cleveland can do that. And if anything, you know, Cleveland's big horse, LeBron, is looking a little bit tired. I think he's just exhausted.
On any given day, LeBron can just drive to the basket on pretty much anyone except for guys like Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. Everyone else in the league, he can just go to the hole in almost every single play. And he was trying to do that on Wednesday night, but fell up short, and it seemed like it was just due to exhaustion.
Mm-hmm. A 3-2 series lead for Boston, and as you talk about the exhaustion, the fatigue factor, LeBron is averaging almost, Motez, 39 minutes in this particular series. That is a lot to ask of him. And so, you know, as we step back and we evaluate how this has played out with Cleveland, how this has played out with Boston, Boston with the advantage right now, who is to blame in terms of for Cleveland and finding themselves in such a precarious position right now within this series in the Eastern Conference Finals?
You gotta think back at last summer when Kyrie announced that he wanted to leave and the decisions that they made surrounding that trade, and the axing of former GM David Griffin at completely the wrong time has all led to this. You know, this is LeBron working with an ensemble cast of some guys who are looking a little old and sluggish and some guys who are looking a little too young and raw and other guys he just hasn't played with for very long. And it's kind of a mishmash of guys, and LeBron in the past has been able to take mishmashes all the way to the finals. This time it's questionable whether he can do it. So who's to blame? You've got to think in part it's got to be management.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, they gave away a trophy asset to their biggest rival in the East, Boston, who now it looks like is going to take the mantle for best team in the East going forward, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years or
right,
so.
Right.
They've gotten a budding superstar in Jason Tatum. We all can see that. And the sidelining of Kyrie and Gordon Hayward has only allowed Jason Tatum to flourish. He just looks like an all-star right now. So you bring back Kyrie, you bring back Gordon Hayward, and you've got a big three for Boston next season. God knows what other trades they're going to make in the offseason. But they certainly look like the team to beat in the East going forward. I mean, imagine if you take away Kevin Durant and Steph Curry from Golden State. They're hardly going to get past the first round, much less the finals. But Boston, all of a sudden, looks like a team that could go to the finals without their two best players.
Well, and you look about talking about the two best players with Gordon and with Kyrie. But what about just the coaching, who has been sensational in Brad Stevens? I mean, this is a guy that deserves a lot of credit, too. He has been able to, you know, have all the rotations and motivate his guys. And it just really seems like there's genuine respect among all of them and what he's been able to accomplish.
For sure. Without a doubt, he's a highly respected coach throughout the league, not just with his own players, but with other players, too. It seems like other guys want to play for him. He does instill discipline, defense-first philosophy, and shot selection is key. All the things that matter to top NBA teams. And, you know, he overachieved in college with Butler, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
getting them
uh-huh.
all the way to the final game, yeah, mm-hmm. with Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
And let's credit Danny Ainge for picking a guy who was unproven.
Great point, yep.
In the pros. You know, we've seen lots of guys come from the pros and not do so great. Come from college and not do so great in the pros, you know. And so this was an excellent choice by Danny Ainge, and also to give him the patience, the time to work with forming a proper rotation and giving guys confidence and actually forming some young players into now what's looking like at least a couple of superstars.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that game underway, the Celtics very hungry to get to the finals. But here, you know, in tonight's game, I mean, LeBron James, I mean, he's facing elimination. How do you think that they will respond ultimately and how this game's going to play out?
Well, I think if I'm looking at a crystal ball, I think Cleveland will win at home. And I think it'll go to Game 7 in Boston. And LeBron James is not beyond winning a Game 7 on the road. We all know that. He did it a couple of years ago at Golden State in, you know, when the stakes were higher. So he can do it, but it just seems like physically his legs are tired and the other guys are not responding. And guys like J.R. Smith are just jacking up bad shots.
Yep.
And I have no idea why J.R. Smith is still a starter on this team. It just behooves me. I would much rather have Kyle Korver in there personally. I know he has his defensive limitations, but still. So, you know, if I'm predicting, I don't think Cleveland are going to advance, and I think LeBron will probably be playing his last game in a Cavs uniform very soon.
You're listening to The Voice, CNN Sports, ESPN UK. That is Motez Bashara with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is a feature writer, of course, has an upcoming book, Athletes Who Rock. And as we break down and dissect the series between the Celtics and the Cavs, let's talk some more about LeBron. I mean, what do you think the trust factor is with his teammates? You were talking about perhaps this is the last time that he's going to be, you know, in a Cavs uniform.
In terms of in-game trust, do you mean, or in terms
sure.
of what he's going to do after the season?
In-game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's always been a guy who's trusted his teammates. You know, he's always been the guy to give the extra pass to the open player, no matter if he's missed shots before. And he's trust. Yeah, I don't think that wavers. I think once it's game time, I think LeBron always makes the right decision and the generous decision. Sometimes to his detriment. He's been criticized for that before, for passing up big shots to the open guy. LeBron is fundamentally always going to do the right thing, and I think players have to respect him on the court. And you know, he's taken guys that we just mentioned, J.R. Smith. You know, he's taken guys like that all the way to championships. So I don't think that wavers at all once, you know, tip-off starts.
You know, Motez, we talked about this last week on the show, just about LeBron and the perception of him as perhaps the all-time greatest. Do you think LeBron James, do you think he's underappreciated?
I don't really think he's. I mean, people talk about him as one of the greatest players of all time, so I don't see how he can be underappreciated at all. I would rank him certainly in the top three or four. He is my favorite player to watch of all time. And whether he's underappreciated, no, I don't think so. You ask anyone in Cleveland, they're begging him to stay. Mm-hmm. And I think all 29 other teams would be desperate to have him too. So, no, not at all. He's probably where he is, where he should be. The question is, where in terms of legacy, but the question is, where does he want to go next? Does he want to stay in Cleveland? I'd give that about a 10% chance. Does he want to stay in the East? I would say maybe he would look at a team like Philly to join two budding stars and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons there. But Philly's not the most glamorous place in the world, and I think he's probably wants some glamour after spending a few years in Cleveland, no offense. So I think he's probably looking at Los Angeles and thinking about the Lakers or perhaps the Clippers.
Our Eastern Conference Finals coverage continues tonight with CNN Sports and ESPN UK feature writer, that is Motez Bashara, after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you're with us. Join us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. We're going to continue breaking it all down. Boston leads the series 3-2 with Motez Bashara from CNN Sports and ESPNU. Just out of curiosity, I mean, what do you think going into tonight's game, the emphasis was for Ty Lue? What do you think he stressed to his team so that they can take care of business, as you were talking about?
Well, he's got to stress defense quite clearly, because these the Celtics were just breezing past them far too often. And shot selection. I mean, you get both of those things going. And Cleveland is hard to beat at home, you know, if they
That's
can get
true.
Some steals
mm-hmm.
and get running. And get Korver and some of the other guys shooting deep threes, then, you know, that's the way forward. Just back to your earlier question in terms of, is LeBron underappreciated? I think he's probably slightly underappreciated as a point guard, because I think that is the position he has played most of his career. They showed a stat in the game the other day that he's the third all-time leading assist maker in, mm-hmm. in playoff history, behind only John Stockton and Magic Johnson. If you think about all the fantastic point guards, Isaiah Thomas, Jerry West, et cetera, who have played in the playoffs, and that LeBron James has eclipsed them, he is kind of underappreciated as a playmaker. and as a wonderful passer in the mold, I would say equally as good as a guy like Jason Kidd.
You know, when I think about this series between the Cavs and the Celtics, you know, one of the things I was going to talk to you tonight, Motez, was about, you know, who's got the most pressure on them in this particular series. And I have to wonder about Cleveland. I mean, you know, the possibility of LeBron moving on, you know, perhaps this is the last shot for Cleveland at a title in some time,
yeah.
Right?
Completely. And the problem is they've traded a lot of their future assets too.
Correct.
To try, you know, for the here and now. So if he leaves, and again, I personally think there's a very good chance he leaves, he's going to leave a team that's going to probably collapse and be cellar dwellers for, you know, a few seasons at the very least. In the same way, weirdly, that the Nets had banked everything on Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and gave away future assets. Well, look where the Nets are so many years later. I fear that might happen to Cleveland, too. Yeah, sorry. I think it's 98% pressure on Cleveland and 2% pressure on the Celtics. If the Celtics lose the series, no big deal. They regroup again with their two best players next season and make another shot at it. You know, if Cleveland loses, everything's going to blow up.
Right. I agree with you. Hey, game six underway. LeBron, he needs some help tonight. It's going to be compelling to watch how this all plays out. Always compelling when we go one-on-one with our dear friend. That is Motez Bashara from CNN Sports, ESPNU, UK. Their feature writer, Motez, always has amazing articles. Check out his Twitter feed. And listen, we're actually going to be taking off the month of June, a little bit of July, and we will be back, and we look forward to another conversation. Thanks so much, Motez.
My pleasure. Always fun.
Absolutely. Thanks. You bet. That, of course, was Motez Bashara helping us break down the NBA playoffs. A very special thank you to all of our amazing guests and our lineup. Don't forget the Big E Sports Show. We're going to be taking a break a little bit in the summer. I got all this junior golf I got to take care of and can't be in two places at once.